Air.
Do it live!
Ever do it live.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pi Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aurelius by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a crispy and crunchy 365 degrees something or other to keep a sin flood of statism out of your
Fahrenheit.
Can you feel it? Is it working, Michael and Cal? Can you feel it?
Blah! Yes.
Meow.
The Freedom Fiends is covered by a no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at bipcot.org. So what's going on, Michael? Why are you doing the furries tonight? You have stuff to talk about.
Why am I furrying? Well, yeah, I'm doing the furries.
Explain furries because I can never remember.
Furries stands for... Oh, I don't have that on my new computer. It's when I interrupt a show I'm not scheduled on. I usually come in during... You know, I'm not on the top. I come in and surprise people. Because, you know, it's always kind of been my lifelong dream, really, since I was a kid. Like, I'd listen to the radio, and I'd be like, I wish I could just talk on this. Why won't they let me? And now, I have a radio show where I don't even have to show up, and in the middle of it, I can just jump in the middle of a segment and interrupt on, you know, like, 17 stations or something. It's cool. So
you're like Urkel.
Does he do that?
He interrupts.
I don't know.
Oh. I don't know what that is. But furries isn't what you think it is. It stands for fiend phone unscheduled or
unnecessary.
Unnecessary re-education exigency service or something like that. It's when I interrupt. It's my emergency broadcast system, but not really. Yeah.
I understand now why the animal noises are made.
Because of the furries. Yeah, we used to have a friend that was very into furries and made furry memes, and he has me blocked out. You know, a lot of people have me blocked, and there's a lot of people I have blocked. I don't know most of the people I have blocked, but, you know, there's a lot of people that... I was noticing today, I was looking at the list of people that are still using the BIPCOT license, which I created. Like a quarter of them, you know, there's like 60 of them or, you know, 40 of them. Like a third of them or half, somewhere between 25 and... 30%, like, have me blocked or I have them blocked. But they're still using the product because it's a great product, you know, the BIPCOT no government license. But someone else that knows me really well, a close friend of mine today, was like, you know, Michael, maybe you are a butthole if you so many people don't like you. You know, they say if you meet more than three jerks in a day, chances are you're one of them. But I'm kind of a jerk. But here's the other reason for that, too. Like, my whole life, I've made fast friends with people, like really genuine close friends with people, to where, like, I talk to them all the time, and they're close to me. And when I'm close to people, I don't have a lot of time, free time, so I basically get close to people who have some artistic talent, you know, doing a show, doing music, making movies, whatever. You know, like, the only people I have time to talk to are people I'm doing projects with. The projects I do don't make much or any money, so I generally can't pay people much or anything. But I expect people to work as hard for free when there's no money as they would if they're getting paid, because I do. And I get in these really intense relationships with people, quick, fast friends, and used to have no filter. I used to become friends with everybody, and now I don't. And I also, there's a lot of people from San Francisco who hate me because I'm not a liberal anymore. You know, they're like that kind of mental illness. So, but also I expect people to do these really intense things, like work for, you know, 2 years on a film that may never see the light of day, that ends up seeing the light of day, or do a radio show in the middle of the night when they have to get up for work. And, you know, when people start slacking off, I get upset at them. And then they feel harmed. Touched in bad places. But I also, like I said, tend to, what is it William S. Burroughs said? The insane have always loved me. You know, I attract creative, quote unquote, people, let's say. So how about you guys?
I am approaching the end of my first 4-year enlistment with the Freedom Fiends.
Nice.
Yeah.
I hope you stick
around. In March, it'll be 4 years. Well, we have to find out
if I'm going to get station of choice, reenlistment bonus, you know, all that other stuff.
Yeah, but if you ever quit, you're going to get stop lost. You know that, right? Cal, oh, I'm on with two vets. They get it. Cal, did you get stop lost?
No. Yeah, I didn't get any.
For those who don't know about the stop loss, what happens when you enlist in the military for the first time is there's a basic 8-year commitment. If you sign up for 4 years, you do your 4 years on active duty, and you have this 4-year commitment in the IRR, inactive ready reserves, which means that they can call you up in case the Schumer hits the fan. You don't have to go to any drills. You don't have to keep your hair short or anything like that. You're just subject to callback. and they put that in the contract in the beginning. When you first
enlist. Do they cut your hair when they call you up? Do they cut your hair or do they let you go fight with Shaggy?
No, I'm pretty sure they cut your hair. But I remember when Desert Storm came up, I had buddies that were living in Germany, and because they were living outside of the continental United States, they weren't subject to any recall had there been one.
Although, isn't Germany where they launch everybody from to the Middle East?
There was a fair amount of troops deployed there. Yeah, back in the Cold War era, the fear was that the Soviets were going to come through the Fulda Gap and tear everything apart. But realistically, their doctrine was to nuke everything before they went through. So
now they're doing it with bots and memes, apparently.
Yeah,
the meme war.
What does it say that 13 Russians with the speak broken English have a better message than the Hillary campaign?
Hey-o. I guess that's kind of like saying if someone that doesn't speak English that is a high school dropout, can you do your job better than you? You're not very good at your job.
Right.
Yeah. So people died today. Well, someone died and then someone else I found out died. But I think I'm going to go with the one I know because we probably won't lose any stations over it. The other one we might. So
let's got some comments that I'll probably lose a couple. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I always picture that, like, in the stations, they have, like, the big, like in the Frankenstein movie, those big switches on the wall, those old-timey power switches that go ka-chunk. I always picture that stations have one of those, and when we, start talking about someone they like, they just go, shut down everything, and go ka-chunk. And then it goes to jazz music or something, but we'll be good, we promise. Okay, so there was this guy named Steve Emke, I don't even know how to say it, I'll find it. So anyway, this guy lived in my town, Jamestown, New York, when I went to college, 10 miles from where I grew up in Westfield, New York, Western New York, the far west, as far away from New York City as you can be and still be in New York. And Steve Emke was a big shot at a radio station. I mean, basically, he was on a radio station that's like 10,000 watts. And, like everyone in town was like, oh, you're on the radio. Now, we're on 16 stations that are probably average 5,000 to 20,000 watts. But, I don't go around going, oh, I'm on radio. Because now people are like, radio, what's that? You mean like Wi-Fi?
By the way, coming back from Porkfest, I drove pretty close to your dad's place. I could have stopped there and done a rap song with him.
Oh, nice. In Westfield, New York? Yeah, he's not there anymore. But, yep, don't look for him. He's not there. But so Steve Emke was really square, man. And he was like, also, I guess he did a lot of drugs, but he was really like, respect the flag, conservative, support our troops, blah, blah, blah. So I used to write for this magazine. It was like, like those free papers that every big city has that are worth every penny, entertainment papers. So Jamestown, New York had an equivalent of that, but it wasn't syndicated like those are now. It was called Nightline. And it was published by a guy who thought he was really cool because he played bass and sang in a Kiss cover band. Like, that's what passed for cool in Jamestown, New York in the early 80s, was playing in a Kiss cover band or being on one tiny little radio station. So the guy who ran Nightline also did a lot of blow, allegedly. I don't know if he's around anymore, but... So I had a column in that paper. It was my first paid writing job. I wrote a column called Institution View that was just really random, crazy, whatever came into my head that had nothing to do with the entertainment. Like every other one was like, you know, Cold Gin played tonight at the Rusty Nail. They played 27 different Kiss songs. It was amazing. You know, that was like what passed for journalism in that magazine. So I wrote this thing that was all about, like, the one I remember the best was called The Hum of the Universe. And it was about how there's a chord that we can all hear without hearing it that's like, you know, the highest note to the lowest note to infrared, ultraviolet, to radio waves, to microwaves, you know, all the way up to like the rotation of a nucleus or the rotation of an electron around a nucleus down to like, you know, one complete cycle of the universe. And that was the chord. And I described this. It was pretty trippy. It was pretty cool. That's what I thought about in college instead of what I was supposed to be learning. And, you know, I wasn't a libertarian. I was just a stoner or whatever. I didn't go up to people and do the cool stuff like Cal does. I'm sorry. You know, asking them questions. You're really good at that, Cal. I like that. I like those videos you do.
Thanks, man.
I got turned off to libertarianism because my first day of college, when I was tripping or something, I don't know, allegedly, back when I did that, the Libertarian Party had a card table set up in the student union, and they were like really clean cut, like they looked like the Young Republicans or something. And they looked at me, and I had long hair and a, you know, army jacket covered with fluorescent psychedelic paint, and they immediately knew what pitch to use, and they said, "Hi, are you interested in legalizing or in decriminalizing marijuana?" And I looked at him, and I looked at the literature on the paper, and in my mind, it was like grooving and dancing to The Hum of the Universe. I was like, "Oh my God, these people are like evangelists. This is spooky." And it turned me off of libertarianism for like 20 more years, man. But I guess there's an internet now, so it's easier to discover that stuff. These kids today, when I was your age, we had to march through the student union tripping to find out about liberty.
It's easier to embrace libertarianism when you don't have to deal with actual libertarians. We'll be back.
Yeah, or the Libertarian Party. Works. All right. I like that. That's true, man. I've had a lot of that lately. Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
The 6th Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan, just outside of Kalamazoo, from Thursday, June 21st through Monday, June 25th. There will be all sorts of activities in a family and adult-friendly environment. Scheduled speakers include Dana Martin, Brett Benat, Prof. CJ, and Scott Horton. Round up your friends and family members and get them registered today at mplfest.org. That's Mike Papa Lima Fest.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Can I tag you, Cal, in Obama's Heat State, a rap song that I did with my 91-year-old at the time, Dad, 97 now, back when Obama was, you know, we interviewed him on the Freedom Fiends. He came to visit me, probably actually for the first time in my life, sad to say, but we put him on the air and interviewed him one afternoon, and Nima said, "What do you think of Barack Obama, Jack?" And he said, "Barack Obama is a liar and a socialist and his feet stink." And Nima made a sample out of it, and we turned it into a really good hip-hop song with a guy named Rich Black, who's back east. Yeah, that's Andre. I stack silvers. Yeah. I stack silvers. So, Steve Emke. So I was there writing for Nightline in Jamestown. The offices of Nightline in Jamestown were downstairs from my apartment that I shared with three other guys. That after I moved to D.C., a childhood friend of one of the guys who'd known him for like 20 years or, you know, 15 years, walked into his house with a shotgun and shot him in the chest and then killed him and then drove to a cafe, went in the cafe, only person in there, bought a hot cocoa, drank the hot cocoa slowly, and then said to the waitress, "I need to use your phone." This is before cell phones. And he used the phone and he called 911 and said, I just murdered a drug dealer, Satanist. And yeah, he's still in prison. Actually, he went in prison for 25 years. 20 years, and now he's in a mental hospital. They wouldn't let him out because he's so nutty. But so Nightline, my first paid writing job, I wrote a weekly column that was like 4 or 5 column inches, which is about whatever I wanted. Sometimes it was 7 column inches. Sometimes it was, you know, big. And many inches. Such wow. And their pay was a six pack of beer and a sandwich for each article I turned in, which was like, I mean, I thought I'd arrived. You know, I was like doing something I'd do for free, and they paid me a 6 pack of, like, you know, PBR and a, you know, like crappy egg salad from the gas station down the street. good times. But it was my first paid writing job. And so this guy, I wrote this one week. I was like, I've been partying too much, and I forgot to write an article. And I'm like, oh my God, it's, you know, 6:45 on Sunday night. It's due at 7 o'clock. So I called on the phone downstairs to the office, and I said, "All right, so I don't. Here's my article for this week. Call it What I Like About President Ronald Reagan by Michael W. Dean." And then I said, "Print 4 blank column inches." And they did. And Steve Emke from the local radio station, Big Shot, Big Wig, Star, you know. Star, who had Coke in his pocket all the time, wrote a letter to Nightline that they published the next week that basically said, "While I don't agree with everything the president says, you have to respect the office." That was the first time I ever heard that term. And he said, blah, 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 America, patriotism, the troops. And, you know, I think that this drugged out little space cadet, Michael Dean, which is what I, you know, at the time, it might have been, maybe it's true, I don't know. But he said, I think this drugged out little space cadet should just shut up. So this, you know, guy whose job is basically being a journalist told me not to practice the Second Amendment. I mean, the First Amendment. And so I read this and I was just shocked. Like, you know, like, wow, what happened? Like, now I'd laugh at that, and it's not true now, but it would have. I was shocked. You know, I'd never, like, really had someone push back at me in public about that before. This is before the internet. You have to understand that. Like, this happens 40 times a day to all of us now, but, you know, I didn't know what to do. I told my dad about it, or he saw it and called me about it, and because, you know, they delivered this thing all over the county. And, you know, he's like, we must do something to protect the family name. And I'm like, I don't know. What are you going to do? And he's like, I'm going to talk to my attorney. He talked to, I didn't say no and I didn't say yes. I was just like, oh, I guess. I don't know. I didn't know that's what you do or you could do or anything, you know, and I didn't have any sense of, like, now I wouldn't go to it. I would not go to an attorney for that. I just laugh at him and talk about him on 16 or 17 radio stations. But, so he, my dad called his attorney, and his attorney called up the guy's station. Oh, he signed it with the letter with Steve Emke and then his station's call letters. That was his big mistake, because the attorney called the station and said, you know, we're going to threaten legal action against Steve and you if we don't get a sincere public apology promptly. And when you get back, you'll hear about, find out what happens next.
Clickbait.
Click.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Cell 411 is a great free app for Android and iPhone. It allows you to set up public and private cells for dealing with crime, emergencies, setting up neighborhood watch, activism, and even protecting your kids from bullies on the street or at school. Cell 411 gives your cells turn-by-turn directions to your location with one touch on your phone. There is also a Bluetooth panic button available that can be worn on your wrist, belt, or around your neck. Cell 411 has real-time chat for each alert so you can discuss the incident with family or friends in real-time video streaming. The video is stored on Cell 411's servers so your evidence cannot be deleted if your phone is taken or destroyed. Cell 411 has decentralized ride sharing that allows for payment in any form, crypto, barter, silver, cash, etc. Cell 411 does not take a cut of your fare. Get Cell 411 free on Google Play and the iTunes Store, or go to getcell411.com. That's getcell411.com.
So, I want to give a shout out in the middle of my resentment rant to Cell 411. Probably the only advertiser who wouldn't be offended by that segue. Cell 411 is a great app you can find on the Google Play or iPhone store, if you're one of the beautiful people, that allows you for free to replace the police and emergency services, more or less, by setting up cells of your friends that it will automatically send a message to and give step-by-step directions to your GPS coordinates and film video and store it on the Cell 411 servers so it cannot be deleted. Get Cell 411 at getcell411.com. So, Steve Emke, so this guy that, like, tried to ruin my life, basically. He also tried to get me fired. He talked to the people that own Nightline and said, you know, I'm going to get my station to pull ads if you don't fire this drugged out little space cadet. And they didn't do it because he got in trouble with the station and he didn't have the power after that to tell them what to do. And the guy liked me. You know, the guy in the Kiss cover band liked me. He thought I was weird and cool and really quirky, but, you know, you know how, like, people in Kiss cover bands think they're really weird and contrarian and bizarre, and they're really just incredibly normal? Yeah. So that was this guy. So Dad's lawyer called him up, or called the station up and said, you know, we're going to sue the station, since he used the call letters, and you, or and him, if we don't get a sincere public apology in writing in the paper. And the next week, Steve Emke said in the paper, in Nightline, I would like to make a, quote, sincere public apology to Michael W. Dean, unquote, Steve Emke. And that was it. He didn't say what he's apologizing for. He didn't sign his station name. So that was his puss-puss reply to try to make things right when, you know, government guns were pointed at him to try to make him nice. But, so this puss-puss eventually lost his job in Jamestown and ended up on another single station in Florida. And I was telling someone this story today in email. We were chatting back and forth, someone that I recently reconnected with from my town. It was someone that ripped me off for $10 when I was 15 and felt bad about it all this time, and recently, like, wrote me and said, I want to make amends to you. And I said, well, let's see, inflation calculator said that'd be $42 now. How about you send $20 to the cat shelter in the town and donate in my name? And he did, and they wrote me and thanked me. Well, they actually thought I was dead, because he said, I'd like to make this in the name of Michael Dean, and they thought it was in memoriam donation. And I wrote them and said, I'm still alive. So, and I told them I'd give them 20
Not
bucks
a guarantee.
Too. I told them I'd give them 20 bucks too if they got back to me and, you know, told me where to do it or how to do it, and they never did. So I've got $20 for the Westfield Cat Shelter.
Of course not. You're dead.
I know. Someone's going to mock up an email. Someone's going to mock up an email by the end of the show and pretend to be the Westfield Cat Shelter and send me a Bitcoin address, probably.
How many times has a Michael Dean voted for the left?
What?
How many times has Michael Dean, if you died, right, voted for the left?
Oh. I thought you meant how many. Yeah, because the dead vote. I thought you meant how many times have I voted for the left. Well, I haven't voted much in my life, and I haven't voted in like 12 years. But the first time I ever voted, it was for God, who would it have been? It was a lefty, and it was in
Dianne 84. Feinstein.
I voted for her in San Francisco, or no, Pelosi in San Francisco once. But and I'm making amends to the world by doing this show. I feel really bad about that, but. No, who was it? Al Gore? No, he's Republican. Is he a Democrat? I don't even know. They're all the same to me. It was whoever ran in 19 for president, and a Democrat in 19, let's see, 84, 64, 74, 82. Who would that have been?
Nobody. That wasn't a presidential year. 80
okay,
and 84.
83? 84. Okay, it's 84.
84 would have been Reagan and Mondale.
It was Mondale. I voted for Mondale.
You're one of the six.
I also voted for Bob Barr once. That was the last time I voted.
Oh, when he was running as a libertarian?
Yeah, yeah. The head of the CIA was running as a libertarian after writing the Patriot Act. I didn't know. I was newly minted, man. All right, so Steve Emke went to Florida, and I was looking him up today to try to find out how to spell his name in this email I was writing my old... The guy, you know, who ripped me off but made amends, who's now my good friend, who'll probably have me blocked in a year, or I'll have him blocked. I don't know. I'm kidding. He's cool. So I was looking up Steve Emke to find out how to spell his name, and he died 2 years ago, and the autopsy said drugs and alcohol. So, yeah, this guy that, you know, tried to get me fired and called me a drugged out little space cadet in college. Tried to get me fired for my first paid writing job. Died of drugs and alcohol. The ironing is delicious, as Ralph says on The Simpsons. What do you guys think?
It sounds a lot like these hardcore social conservatives that are all about traditional family values and straight heterosexual relationships with nothing more than doing it the old-fashioned way when they make sexy time, getting caught with like three boys and a goat.
Yeah, or tapping three goats and a boy in the bathroom, in the men's room.
Yeah, it happened to some politician recently. Very, you know, anti, you could say, LGBT folks, and, you know, he was caught with a guy in his office, and so he had to resign. This is like last month.
I don't know what it is, but the louder they bark about that stuff, the more likely they are to get caught.
Like that guy that stalked me a couple years ago for what he thought was not being a good libertarian or anarcho-capitalist or voluntarist, too. Now suddenly his profile picture on Facebook is, I stand for the flag and kneel for the cross. That guy. Oh, man.
Well, at least he can get his sacraments correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, if he's such a good Christian, how does he justify all that idolatry that he's engaging in? Because that's what he's
doing.
To
the state? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the second commandment says
can't serve two masters. I was cross talking. Yeah. I wasn't saying that's the second commandment. I was saying it says in the Bible don't serve two masters, which also says don't make false idols, and worshiping the state is both. Yeah, you can't be a good Christian and love the state, man.
But with the fusion of American Christianity and nationalism, the Second Command Amendment now reads the right to keep and worship false gods and idols shall not be infringed.
Yeah,
and that's what that is exactly what they are doing, because they use words like desecrate. When some dirty hippie burns a flag, they say desecrate, and desecration means destroying a sacred, usually implies a religious connotation to it. And they say that they're not worshiping it; they're just pledging allegiance to it, pledging loyalty to it, and.
Right or wrong.
What else? Yeah. But I mean, it's not worship. It's showing love, respect, reverence. And if you do desecrate it, I will issue a fatwa calling for your head. Oh, and it's not an idol. It's a symbol.
Of an idol.
Which means totally not a religious icon.
I'm waiting for Trump to... I think Trump's solution to... demands for gun control is going to be requiring a loyalty oath to own a gun to America. Yeah.
Not a joke.
Oh, I'm serious. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that happening. And you know what? I'm sure that most of the Republicans out there will get on board with it. There was a rumor going around that the individual mandate was going to be taken away and replaced with the patriotic compliance requirement. Ooh. And Republicans
to replace what?
With that, because the individual mandate of Obamacare was going to be replaced by the patriotic compliance requirement. Just to get Republicans on board.
Is this a joke or is this true? It's a joke, right?
I don't.
It could be true. It could easily be true.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're going to call that thing the Patriot Act, sure.
Yeah, but the real patriotic ones, they loved the individual mandate because it focused on individualism, where every individual was collectivized into the communistic insurance pool. or something to that effect. I don't know.
So I wanted to say,
not a guarantee. Allegedly,
the moral of the Steve Emke story is, if you cross me, I will hold a grudge for 35 years and dance on your grave on radio on more stations than you were ever on. People.
Oh, yes. The other moral of the story is, if you call MWD a drugged out space cadet and then you die with drugs and alcohol in your system, Michael will dance on your grave with maracas in one hand and his oxygen bottle in the other one.
Yeah. Oh, I did something kind of iffy about all this, iffier than talking about this with Glee in, you know, doing the Schadenfreude shake. The Schadenfreude shake.
Schadenfreude.
Yeah. So the article I found that said he died was in some local paper in Florida. It was not an obituary. I mean, it mentioned that he died from drugs or alcohol. You know, they don't say that in obituaries. They say died of a long illness. That either means cancer or drugs. Neem and I read an article on here one time of, like, interpreting the buzzwords or the secret dog whistles in obituaries. And well, died after a long illness is AIDS, cancer, or heroin. So,
died unexpectedly, suicide.
Yeah, there you go. Died unexpectedly and is at peace now, his suicide. So this article about him was praising him for being such a great journalist, literally. And there were no comments on it. Like, this guy had no friends, or, like, you know, no one cared enough to write. You know, when a nobody dies, usually on the paper, some of the comments are like, oh, he was my neighbor, he was a great guy. Nobody. This guy's on the radio, and nobody, you know, said anything nice or bad about him or anything. So I set the record straight. I posted with my Facebook account and said, Steve Emke tried to ruin my life in the 80s in Jamestown, New York, for practicing the First Amendment, for using political speech, for criticizing the president, which is the most protected speech under the First Amendment. He is no journalist. And then
allegedly.
I wrote, right. And then I wrote, you know, no tears on my end, but then I didn't post that, but I posted the rest of it. So
thank you for taking the high road when talking about Canadian OD'd.
Oh, man. Well, have a good show, guys. I'm going to take off.
Stick around, man. Stick around.
Nah.
We'll finish up the hour.
I'm really tired, man. All right. Okay.
No, come on.
We'll talk about Billy Graham. Yeah.
Okay.
And furthermore,
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agrist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agrist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgristHosting.com.
And Michael has decided that he wasn't going to stick around for another segment. His lung is bothering him, so he's gonna go chill out for a little bit and go play with his kitties. So we're going to do a little redemption in the third act for the final segment of the first hour. And it appears that China still has not shed off its communistic anti-capitalistic ways and anti-fun and just all that other stuff. And it turns out that they want to ban something. They want to wage war on a activity. I'm not even sure how economic this particular activity is, but why don't you tell us about this, Cal?
I'd say that if you ever want another argument why communism is not so great, Look what's happening.
Like we need them anymore.
This one's going to hit home for a lot of people. They're waging war on funeral strippers. And apparently it's been so it's a problem that, you know, they go to funerals and apprehend and detain and arrest a lot of these strippers. Apparently for a lot of these people, it's in their culture, it means a sign of good health for the person who passes away when there's a lot of people attending your funeral. And so someone figured it out that maybe stripping and funerals should go together. It's a combination.
Yeah. It says some communities in rural China reportedly believe that bigger attendance at funerals help to honor the dead and bring them good fortune. And some experts say the erotic shows pay tribute to fertility. So maybe that's how, maybe it's the one-child policy that is driving the anger against it. But yeah, this is just absolutely horrible. Absolutely horrible. In the Ministry of Culture, what? My God, that is communistic.
That is anyway. Very 1984. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, you know, they say that China has a fertility problem in that mostly males are being raised, right? It's because they find that males can support the family more than a female. So now the ratio is really off balance. And that tax farm, there's more males than there are females. So they have problems with, you could say, with fertility for sure. But yeah, you know, they're spending a lot of money in this, which I think is kind of crazy. I don't know if the, I've seen some people twerk at funerals. You know, there's some videos that come out. Maybe it's a culture exchange thing that's happening.
No, I've never seen twerking at a funeral.
You've never seen twerking? Oh, no.
A little like swaying back and forth while singing the gospel, but I've never seen a full-blown boogie, let alone swinging from a pole. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe I just go to the wrong funerals. I don't know. Maybe I need to try being Chinese for a little while.
I think that's something to experience the Chinese culture. Reportedly, they have a hotline to report a, quote, funeral misdeeds. It sounds like it's so rampant. They have a hotline number to call for. They're kind of like in, I think in Sweden, you have a number to call for anyone who's mansplaining or manspreading.
Wow. So if you see something, say something.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So if you see a girl going into a funeral home with clear heels on, you know there's a problem.
Yeah. Speaking of funerals, I was recently checking out a cemetery, kind of abandoned here. It used to be owned by the city and got overtaken by the forest nature. And I saw a grave marker called somebody's mother named their son Marijuana. His last name's Thompson, Marijuana Thompson. It's like, that's what a name. What a name to name your kid. It's kind of like the boy named Sue. And it turns out I took a friend to this cemetery, and she knew the guy. She knew Marijuana Thompson. She said that he was like the neighbor for quite some time, for a few years, and then he just disappeared. And now she knew what happened to him. You know, he passed away, apparently. But yeah, that's what a name. No strippers, though, I've heard. Not around here in Richmond. But that might be something new. You know, you have cat cafes. Is it kind of new, coming from Japan? Maybe you have plenty of strippers coming in, accepting Bitcoin.
In recent decades, the Global Times said on Tuesday, Chinese rural households are more inclined to show off their disposable incomes by paying out several times their annual income for actors, singers, comedians, and most recently, strippers to comfort the bereaved and entertain the mourners. I'm so sorry for your loss. Can I give you lap dance?
You're right. Scan for my Bitcoin address. Love it.
We'll be back, second hour. Worms.
Worms.
Biptunia.
Petunia, music for the drive to Alpha Centauri. Petunia's influences are Gary Numan, Brian Eno, Pink Floyd, David Bowie, Led Zeppelin, Grateful Dead, Frank Zappa, Robert Fripp, Blondie, Kraftwerk, and Dead Kennedys. Petunia's styles are trip-hop, rock, pop, glam, industrial, ambient, jazz, and space. Plus, it's got cats and is covered by the BIPCOT NoGov license. You can download Petunia's music free. Go to biptunia.com. That's B-I-P-T-U-N-I-A. Bravo, India, Papa, Tango, Uniform, November, India, Alpha. biptunia.com.
In the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So I am Lou and I am joined by Cal. Michael W. Dean has gone to take a nap with his kitties and we're just going to finish out the rest of the show and have a little fun doing it. So Cal, you've been involved in some of your extracurricular activities, doing your man on the street, challenging the bad ideas of the populace. Tell us a little bit about that and your recent trip to Mordor on the Potomac.
The District of Criminals, some people call it. Yeah, I had a lot of fun these past few days. I have family up in D.C. I'm a D.C. native, too. I lived there for 15 years before moving to Richmond. So I know the place. I love DC, and there's a lot of adventures to be had. And one recent one that I did up there was spreading anarchy in front of the White House. And I think
it's like selling. It's like having a hot dog stand outside of a restaurant. you're poaching away the business. Selling Lucy's outside the tobacco shop.
Yeah, that would be me. And it happens to be with all the with the recent mass shooting, there was a lot of protesters out there. There's protesters there on Monday. It was kind of raining a lot, and a lot of the protesters just lay on the floor, making arguments about feelings and logic and
emotional outbursts.
Right, but you can't really blame a lot of the people that are lying on the floor. A lot of them were children, and these are the ones that have been bussed in. For political usage. So the next day, Tuesday, there was a lot more. There were still people there. And my most interesting conversation I had was with this liberal who was holding a sign with a rifle, with the red mark going across it. And he's obviously anti-gun. So I talked with him and I asked him, the first question I was going to ask him is if he could identify that rifle. He said it's an AR-15. And I was like, all right, what does the AR stand for? He said, assault rifle.
You mean he didn't say Armalite after right, the manufacturer?
Right, exactly. He did not say Armalite. So he said assault rifle. So I already knew this was going to be a fun one. And the conversation went from him wanting to get rid of all guns. He was praising Obama. I had to remind him at every turn about, how horrific Obama has been. But for him, most of this stuff is how Obama's made him feel kind of good about his country, kind of like sports stadiums don't generate the monetary returns that they're claimed, state-backed sports stadiums. But it just provides only a feeling and not the economic agenda it purports to be.
My feels,
yeah. So, yeah, it was interesting. It was fun. That guy especially, I have a video out there on my channel. And
what is your channel? Where can they find this?
You can find it under my name. So you can find it under Cal, K-A-L, Molinet, M-O-L-I-N-E-T. And you'll find the classic anti-gun liberal there. But the one thing about him, though, I would say is that he was very quick to, when he saw my counterpoints, he was like, you know what, I didn't think about that. He's like, oh, you got me. Like, let's talk about Bernie Sanders. Like, you know, he fought against the 1%, and I reminded him quickly that, you know, he's Bernie Sanders is the 1%. He has three houses. Yeah. And then when I told him that, he says, ooh, yeah, you're good.
Wow, that's unusual. Usually when you point out the inconsistencies, they go off on like a crazy tirade and tell you that you hate puppies, kittens, and the poor and roads, and especially hate roads. You want everybody to just run through the woods dodging branches that are growing sporadically out of the trees, and hopefully you don't smack yourself in the face with a bunch of leaves or something like that as you're running. But yeah, congratulations on getting through to them. I always enjoy watching people that can do this man on the street thing, and I'm not bad at it, but I'm not really that good, because I also, after a couple minutes or so of just real absolute nonsense, I have a tendency to just want to shake them and call me.
No, I saw you debate that guy at the Midwest Peace and Liberty.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I like that guy too.
We had a moment where he was on stage and presenting his anarcho-communist views, and he did a really good job countering those.
Mostly it was his girlfriend's anarcho-communist views. I think it was his girlfriend's state-o-communist views.
Yeah, exactly.
I have my moments. So what was the typical nonsense that you got out of this person? What was the main message? Because a lot of times they don't have a message. When you go talk to them, they'll be like, just get out of here. No comment. We're against stuff.
Yeah, he said he was very hippie, but he was kind of praising John McCain. I had to remind him that he's a warmonger. He wanted really to go back to the days for the Renault guns. He wants to take all the guns out and throw them out into the ocean, you know, but because he thinks, you know, first, like, these things causes murder.
Back during the Crusades, there were no guns. During the Norman conquest of England. Yeah. No guns, exactly. No murders. Everything was kumbaya. But anyway.
He brought up a remark about, you know, the American Indians here, you know, were very peaceful. They had bows and arrows. And it's like, yeah, there was no genocide practice among any of the tribes. They didn't have human sacrifice, children, you know, given to the gods, hearts ripped out from their chests. They may not have called it taxes, but it was called tribute, you know? So they have words for the same thing.
If you're not willing to throw your children in the volcano, why should you be allowed to enjoy our sunlight? That was the early free rider fallacy.
Nice. Yeah, and so, you know, of course, he can't answer the questions. Like, you know, what are you going to do if, over 100 million people that do own guns don't turn them in, don't give it up, you know? If they resist, you know, you're going to need guns to take it, to pry it from them. You're going to cause the same kind of violence that you're trying to prevent.
Yeah. Ultimately, every gun restriction is enforced at the barrel of a gun. So these people aren't exactly anti-gun. They're just anti everybody else having guns except for the government. Incidentally, many of these people are the same ones that are saying Trump is literally Hitler and Hitler must disarm the entire civilian population. These are the ones that say that the police are a inherently racist institution, which means only racists should be allowed to have guns. Tommy Lahren, that screechy little right-wing socialist, who is kind of cute on some occasions, you know, in good lighting in Photoshop. But I think she put out a tweet that says, it's really funny, when the police shoot an unarmed black man, the left blames the cops and not the gun. And I guess somebody responded with, yeah, and conservatives blame the unarmed black man and not the cop or the gun. There's certainly an awful lot of cognitive dissonance going on around there. So aside from the magical transformation.
I was going to say, I did ask him about the Trump thing. It's like, well, you view Trump as a fascist, right? It's like, yeah, Trump is a fascist, and you only want him to have assault rifles, right? This fascist government. And he's like, oh, yeah, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So what does it smell like when cobwebs are smoldering? Okay, so aside from the other magical thinking of, oh, there'd be a time where there were no guns and there was no violence, nobody was getting nailed to crosses or poked with spears or anything like that.
Yeah.
What else were they yakking about? Were they talking about the magical background checks and psychiatric examinations and all that other stuff?
You know, I did talk to some of the kids there that were busting. They were busting from a local Springfield high school. And so I asked them if they were against all guns. And they said they weren't, which was kind of cool to hear. Because I was bringing up the questions if they thought that gun-free zones work. And the kids that I talked to said, yeah, they don't work. They were talking about maybe they need more gun laws. And so, you know, there are many gun laws already, I was reminding them. I was reminding that, you know, there's background checks too, and that guy passed background checks. You know, he was even reported to the FBI, and he made a YouTube video, which you brought up and mentioned on Facebook, of him saying that he wants to be a school shooter.
Yeah, right? he made a video. I don't know if it was titled this, but this was his main point. I want to shoot up a school. That's what this guy said. The Florida school shooter made a video saying, I want to shoot up a school. And it was reported to the FBI. They didn't investigate it. I can't prove this, but it's probably because mass shooters don't bring in a whole lot of revenue through civil asset forfeiture like a drug case does. Rape cases don't do that either. So I can see where police departments might not take a threat to human life seriously because they just can't get any funding out of it. But I mean, this guy was known to the local police. This guy was known to the cops of all levels, including the FBI. So these are the people that are going to do the background checks. What's a background check going to find out? They had the cops called on him over 20 times, that his teachers and people that know him have said that he's a crazy lunatic and he's going to shoot something up. Is he going to pull up the YouTube video where he says, I'm going to shoot up a school? I mean, what's the background check going to figure out? And he legally purchased a firearm already. And as a matter of fact, I think most of these mass shooters have had numerous contacts with law enforcement in the past. So it's not like this just happened out of the blue. Like one day somebody flipped a switch and these guys said, hey, wow, I'm going to go shoot some stuff up. No, it was a long time coming, but no. Go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. I was reminding them that the government can't protect them, right? So, you know, obviously they can't protect them in gun-free zones. They couldn't protect them at this recent mass shooting. And they were in agreement that maybe their other solutions are warranted.
Before we move on, there's one thing that I want to point out. I made a meme a couple years ago. It was right after the Washington Navy Yard shooting incident happened, and the meme was Dianne Feinstein standing up doing a little speech, I think holding a gun, and the caption was, "Yes, gun-free zones like the Washington Navy Yard. Yes, background checks like the ones that the Washington Navy Yard shooter went through to get his job." We'll be back.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Freedom Fiends. We are back. We are talking about the foolishness of scribbling words on magic parchment and paper to make things change. And a bunch of people are having emotional outbursts over the most recent Florida mass shooting at a Florida school. And that is something to be upset about, but they have completely abandoned any reason and logic and are just having emotional outbursts, screaming for bans and for government to do things. And one, it's not going to solve any problems. Two, it's probably going to make things a heck of a lot worse. So knock it off, idiots. So anyway, Cal was recently in Mordor on the Potomac. A lot of people were protesting in front of the White House, begging for less freedom or more tyranny, whatever you want to call it. And you talked to some of them. So go ahead and pick up where you left off, Cal.
I was going to say, there was one interesting guy that brought up a interesting different kind of anti-gun, but you could say pro-gun, because he knows that he was saying that, you know, he's not, no one's going to be able to get rid of it, and that insurance, he was saying that gun owners sort of have gun insurance, and that in the event that somebody dies, you know, the victim will be paid out. But I was asking him, you know, but he was also saying if someone were to steal your gun, your insurance will also cover for that shooting. But I was asking him, you know, what about if someone steals, you know, your car and runs someone over, are you still liable for that, right? But then I asked him if he would universalize that. So, you know, why don't you have insurance for everyone? And the event they do violence, you know, the insurance pays for that. But he was kind of limited to the idea of just having on guns. But ultimately, as like with the previous guy, he wants to get rid of all guns. He believes the only government should have guns, that civilians shouldn't have guns. And so I had to remind him, you know, he said, you know, there's no reason they should ever have guns. I said, well, you know, there's a particularly good reason, not that long ago, a couple of decades ago, in the 40s, you can say, a group of people called the Jews. And was they were, you know, they had a register, and eventually on that register, they knew who had guns and were able to disarm them and cease the sale of ammunition for them. It was illegal for them to have that as well. And ultimately, they were, you know, forced into camps, and many of them died. Interestingly, though, he said that, yeah, if they had guns, the Germans would have dealt with them much more swiftly and much more terrifyingly with their more advanced weaponry and artillery, he was saying. But, you know, so he's making the point that, well, because they had better weapons, they would have been able to, it would have been a more massacre. But, you know, that's not the same thing that kind of happened with the United States that had more of advanced military and weaponry with the rice paddy Vietnamese farmer, right? But it was difficult for him to let go of the idea, saying that, well, you know, the Jews, and so, well, who are you to say that the Jews couldn't stand a chance, you know, with themselves being armed?
Yeah, there's a lot of Vietnamese farmers and Iraqi goat herders and Afghani, whatever they do over there. They're kind of laughing about this whole thing about superior firepower and technology and all this other stuff. Yeah, they're laughing their heads off about it.
Yeah.
And there's numerous memes of these lefties saying, there's no way you're going to take on the U.S. government. And it'll show some toothless Vietnamese guy and it says laughing in Vietnamese. And then some Pashto guy and says laughing in IED maker. Yeah, I know that stuff. It's certainly not, they're certainly not using reason to come up with their arguments. It's not well thought out. It's more emotional outbursts and lashing out, I would say.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, too. Just kind of following media points and just regurgitating them, not much thought in actually, you know, researching the issue and looking from, you know, you could say both sides. But even on the right side, you know, the Constitution can't protect you. The government hasn't protected any of these people, right? So even the right to bear arms, people think that, you know, that's where the right comes from the Constitution. But the Constitution didn't protect any of those kids down there either. You know, a lot of people think that, again, this goes back to the idea that they think the government can protect you or they have a duty to protect, but they don't.
Yeah, I'm going to interrupt for just a second. Going back to the whole idea about the Nazis and everything else, this isn't the Nazis. This is Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and he was in the Soviet gulags. And his quote was, and how we burned in the camps later thinking what things would have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family, or if during periods of mass arrest, as for example in Leningrad, when they arrested a quarter of the entire city, people had not simply sat there in their layers, paling with terror and bang of the downstairs.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
And we are back. I want to finish the quote that I started at the end of the last segment. It was from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who spent many, many years in the Soviet gulags. And he was talking about if when the security operatives, by the way, it wasn't the politicians strapping on body armor, kicking in doors and collecting people. It was the cops and soldiers that were doing it, just like they do everywhere else. But anyway, he was talking about had they not cowered in fear, just waiting for the arrest to come and for the knock on the door to tell them to get on the train cars. Had they done something differently, had they understood that they had nothing left to lose and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, or whatever else was at hand, or better yet, a firearm, the organs would very quickly have suffered a shortage of officers and transport, and notwithstanding all of Stalin's thirst, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt. If we didn't love freedom enough, and even more, we had no awareness of the real situation. We purely and simply deserved everything that happened afterward. A little food for thought. But anyway, so go back to what you were talking about before, Cal, please.
No, that was a good segue quote there. it kind of reminds me of another mass shooting that people kind of quickly forget. The
Waco
State shooting. Waco, yeah. Waco. Yeah, and Kent State. And that was by the government not that long ago. But there's an interesting idea that's kind of going out right now. It's getting traction, some popularity about arming teachers in public schools. Not to say that this is a correlation or anything like that, but, you know, there hasn't been any mass shootings in private schools. But these public schools which tend to be very much a Lord of the Fly kind of situations. You have all kinds of bad parenting throwing their byproducts into the mix, you know, and the reflectiveness of their bad parenting is, you know, shown into other kids. You know, that's
or the public school environment. You don't have these problems in homeschooling. You don't have these problems in private schooling. You don't have these problems in parochial schooling. It's just the government schools that are getting shot up.
Exactly.
Remember the good old days when only the children's minds were in danger of the public schools? Now it's their bodies, too.
Now it's their bodies. I mean, their bodies has always been in danger. There's at least a dozen states that still allow corporal punishment for public school teachers to beat up kids.
Yeah. And, well, the main risk to children was mostly for their minds. So, but anyway.
Right. Yeah. It's a drug-free zone, unless it's the Ritalin that they chook them up on.
Adderall.
Yeah. And, but yeah, it's, if they do arm the teachers, it'll definitely be a prison for their mind and for their body that they're kind of forced to go. Remember reading about the story about this girl who, in Texas, parents are, there's not a lot of money, so she works. And she missed school 3 days. And, three enough days was enough for this judge. They brought a judge in. Sentence her to jail for overnight.
Was it on a school night?
I know, right? Yeah, right. And now, if you arm these teachers, it'll definitely look like that kind of environment that they've done a kind of good job hiding it. It definitely will be a prison.
Have you ever seen the documentary, The War on Kids?
No, I haven't.
Look that up. I don't know if it's on YouTube. I think I saw it maybe on Vimeo or something else like that. But what it does is it really shows how schools, public schools, have become prisons already. And although I generally think that more guns is probably a good thing, I really don't think arming school teachers is the solution, because one, it doesn't deal with the root cause, meaning of the violence. The army teachers is saying that guns are the problem and not violence. But check that out. All you people out there, do like a Google search on it, find the video for it. It's really interesting. It's something that I saw very early on when coming to Liberty, and I was like, holy cow, it's right. So a lot of good stuff in there.
Yeah, and it's not it's not something that I would want a teacher, especially there's this video that came out a while ago of a teacher having a toy gun shooting at Trump. There was a projection of him on the wall, and she kind of took it out and started, you know, shooting at the wall with her toy gun. Of course, you know, if a kid makes eats a Pop-Tart in the shape of a gun, he gets suspended.
Yeah.
But I don't think anything happened. I mean, I think she got suspended, maybe, but I don't think she ever got fired or anything like that. But yeah, do you really want those kinds of teachers to have guns? And at the same time, I know this is the left and the right, and these kinds of people are trying to break from that mold to see what a free society looks like without that kind of politics. But it seems to be like people on the right will be targeted more, especially by these kinds of teachers, liberal teachers, especially since about 76% of all public school teachers are women. There's a lot of liberals in that system already, and doesn't seem to be even much more safer environment, even for kids who grew up in a conservative environment. Then I would say, if a kid wears his Trump hat, walking in there, or he has different views, and the teacher's armed, it's not going to be something that a kid will try to, continue to protest or argue back. I had a teacher, for example, here at VCU, even happens here at a community college. There's a teacher who brought in a guest to talk about investigative work here in Richmond, and she was going to talk about like what she does for a living, what she does for a job. She talked about once about, and she admitted that the crime that she stopped was sex work. There was a gentleman who was seeking prostitution, and he says, it's a victimless crime. And she started laughing about it and how she caught him, and the class started laughing. I raised my hand and I said, hey, how do you feel about reconciling your thoughts, your statement earlier that it's a victimless crime, and you kind of laughing about it and putting him to, kidnapping him and caging him for a victimless crime? She took that at a very offensive level, and she thought that I was arguing like at her. I was just asking her a question, and she became a bit aggressive and walking towards me. I'm sitting in the back of the class, so she's brandishing her weapon, and she's like enjoying this because I'm pushing her buttons, continue to ask these questions, and she's kind of engaging me in a way that's trying to be hostile. But I've been in the military, so I know how to handle these things. So I'm kind of interchanged. She probably doesn't know that. She probably thinks like her intimidation techniques is great in silencing students. And, so this happens even in college levels. I can't imagine something like that I would imagine something like that would be rampant in public school settings, especially among children who don't know how to handle those kinds of tense situations. So, people say, well, should we arm the teachers? And I say, you see all these problems with public schools. I think maybe we should abolish the public schools
exactly
altogether.
Exactly. If it saves just one child, it's worth it.
There we go.
I think about this. If the public schools have to have police officers, and not just one police officer for like outreach that goes around and talks to people and high fives them in the hallway and stuff like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if they have to have officers that are there as cops to do cop type investigation and all that other stuff. If they have to have metal detectors, if they have to have special locks on the door, barbed wire around on the fences, all that other stuff. If you have to turn the school into a prison, it's already failed. It has already failed. So what's arming the teachers going to do? It's going to create another layer of prison and failure.
Exactly. I got kicked out of that class. The professor saw me being the aggravator, not her guest, making it an unsafe environment and intimidating her student, right? Me, the customer who paid for the class, it was me who had to be kicked out of the classroom for aggravating the guest.
Well, and obviously it's because you're a hippie dope smoker with long hair and not a Air Force veteran that was an MP, or were you guys SPs in there? Or
yeah, MPs? Yeah. So we did security and military police. They combined the two schools.
Okay. So yeah, it's not like you knew what you're talking about or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting then. We can look at the numbers then, right? There's over 350 million guns, 300 and over 300 million, 310 million people in the U.S. And so when you put the number of people there along with the number of gun deaths, this was brought up in one of the conversations I had in D.C., about 60% of them are suicide, right? So at least out of the 33,000 some, that's about 13,000. Gun deaths. So it's not a lot as much as many people make it out to be. So that 13,000, then when you divide that by the 310 million people, you know, the gun deaths or people killed by guns are attributed to about, 0.00004% of the U.S. population. So it's not this this sensationalism that the media likes to make it out to be. It's everywhere. It's all over the place. It's a problem that, you know, just can't stop. It's not as rampant as people. Statistically speaking.
Well, you just hit on something very important. You said that what was it, like 2/3 of those are suicides?
Yeah.
Okay.
60% of all gun deaths are suicides.
Okay. So, and I think I've been seeing a number like 38,000 in 2016 or 30-some thousand. I can't remember exactly what it was. So if 60% of those are suicides, that's not even a gun violence issue. That's a mental health issue. That's a suicide issue.
Right.
Would if people were taking pills or throwing a rope over a tree, would they be talking about banning pills and banning ropes?
There we go.
No, they wouldn't.
All the trees.
Right. And then when you pare that down and you start showing that the assault rifle, the alleged assault rifle that everybody's freaking out over, is probably used the least in firearm-related deaths, you know, why are they freaking out over that? Because it's an emotional issue. It's not based on reason and fact. We'll be back.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends, wrapping it up, ending the show, final segment. You want to keep going on what we've been talking about, or you want to transition over to the Florida House doing their thing? State is kind of state.
Florida House doing their thing. I think it's ridiculous what they're doing.
Okay, well, let's hear about what the geniuses have come up with. One of my biggest problems with these different crises, events, and how everybody freaks out, and they lose their mind and they start calling for stupid stuff like politicians to take action, politicians to start talking about stuff and coming up with solutions. And quite frankly, going to a politician to solve problems is really not the sign of a well-thought-out plan. But anyway, so what are they going to do to solve this problem?
They're going to focus on porn instead. So they're shifting the intention instead of, not that we want them to be involved in the gun issue, right? Because they will make it worse, but they declare that porn is dangerous. And so this past Tuesday, go ahead.
If government action will save one teenager's eyesight, it's worth it. Go ahead, continue. For the children.
For the children. So they said, So this state representative, Carlos Guillermo Smith, a Democrat, was quoted saying, unfortunately, just 5 days after 17 people were gunned down at a Florida school, the Florida House has passed a bill that declares pornography a public health risk. And so you have, people say, look at their priorities, look at the things that they're, you know, most concerned of to be a threat to human life. And I guess, you know, this goes back to, again, you know, their vested interest is not in protecting you. I don't know what it is that their vested interest is in. Their own pockets, of course, in doing absurd things like these.
Well, they're interested in protecting you from pornography.
Pornography. Not that I advocate people engaging this stuff, like, all the time. But, you know, to legislate, you know, this is where their priorities are. You can say. In England, they had the same thing happen not that while ago, and they were banning a list of many things things that adults do in their own bedroom. I believe sodomy is still illegal in Virginia. A fellatio, I believe, is also still legal in the state of Virginia.
Legal or illegal?
People are illegal.
Because it's going to get to a point where every human activity is either going to be mandatory or prohibited.
Exactly. If it's not legislated, it's not on paper, it will soon be. And with the risk of consequences, you know, there's a lot of money to be made from a lot of these things. So, yeah, they find that, so they identify porn as being more of a health risk than, finding the source of where these gun violence is coming from. They can't really readily admit that it's their own government schools, that it's providing maybe an important large factor of these gun violence.
Now, just to make sure, they're not actually going to do anything about porn. They marshaled all their energies together to declare it a health hazard, and that's it. It's kind of like a non-binding resolution, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, but this is Florida. You know, this is where a lot of people go to retire and live out the rest of their lives out there. And sometimes they can get a little too wild. And so, I guess you can imagine then Florida would maybe have a epidemic.
Well, maybe Florida Man is just making it bad for everybody else.
Ah, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
There's a kid who lit a fireworks on top of his head and I think nearly blew off his head. And the mother was campaigning about making it illegal for people to have fireworks in her home state. That's very much what collectivism is. You know, one person does something bad or wrong, everyone's punished. Kind of like boot camp.
Yeah. So, I think it was Madison that says, if men were angels, no government would be necessary. So I would say, well, men are not angels. As a matter of fact, most men are just too darn stupid to have a government in the first place. So, anyway, thanks for coming on tonight. It's always a pleasure. Everybody check out Kel's YouTube channel, KALMOLINET. And for more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms!
Worms. Stay liberated, everyone.
Know you want to be a filmmaker. As Rick of Rick and Morty says, school's not a place for smart people. Nowhere is this more true than film school. Don't waste years and $100,000 being taught by those who couldn't make it. Just get a camera and a $7 Kindle version of $30 Film School 3rd Edition. $30 Film School 3rd Edition is the recent update on the classic 2003 book that helped spark the do-it-yourself filmmaking revolution. Written by DIY filmmaker Michael W. Dean, whose high-quality, low-budget movies star Academy Award winners and nominees, get worldwide distribution and have been in many respected film festivals. The first two editions sold over 100,000 copies, and it's recommended reading in many colleges. The book is back, updated for today's high-def consumer cameras, but still has the same self-starter ethic and tips that no other book has. Get it delivered this minute to your Kindle or phone for only $7. Go to Amazon and type in $30 Film School 3rd Edition. That's $30 Film School 3rd Edition.